Welcome to Ham Radio and More, the program that specializes in amateur radio in the Valley and around the world. Whether you're already a ham or have always wanted to be one, you'll find out about interesting events and issues regarding amateur radio. Your host is Lynn Winkler, KB7LPW. To get in touch with Lynn, call 241-1510 or 1-800-293-5366. That's 1-800-293-KFNN. Ham Radio and More is brought to you by AEA Incorporated, Wallpaper World, and Ken Nichols. Now, here's the host of Ham Radio and More, Lynn Winkler.
CQ, 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 Arizona, and welcome to Ham Radio and More, the only show of its kind in America. I'm your host, Len Winkler, KB7LPW, and today's show is sponsored by Ken Nichols, AEA Incorporated, Antennas West, Wallpaper World. The number to call to get in touch with us is 241-1510, that's 241-1510, or 1-800-293-KFNN. 1-800-293-KFNN. We'll be glad to take your calls if you have a club announcement, want to ask a question, or want to buy or sell some radio gear. My guest today is going to be Todd Lefkowitz, N7PMP, and we'll talk to Todd in a couple of moments, but I just spoke to him on the telephone, and he got tied up a little bit, so he'll be running just a little bit late. So we'll change my venue here just a little bit. First of all, let's start out with some QSTs. This Tuesday, January the 21st, is the monthly Superstition Amateur Radio Club meeting. It starts at 7:30 p.m. at the Velda Rose Church on the northwest corner of 56th Street and Main Street in Mesa. All are invited to attend, and the special guest program will be Al Gross, W8PAL. And Al will bring with him his suitcase of inventions. He's got all kinds of stuff. You know, he's credited with being one of the first, if not the first, to invent the first walkie-talkie on 300 megahertz, the digital beeper, and many other items. So he'll be there with that. Don't miss that. He'll also have a neat slideshow. And I want to thank the Superstition Amateur Radio Club for putting this show, Ham Radio More, on its calendar and its monthly newsletter. I really appreciate it. There's still time for no-charge technician classes, which will be given by the West Valley Amateur Radio Club, and they're going to start January the 31st, and they're from 7 to 9 p.m. And if you want to register or get more information, give George Hands, KE7DH, a call at 974-3361, 974-3361. He'll give you more information, tell you how you can register for the technician class. Also, the West Valley Amateur Radio Club is sponsoring a ham radio estate sale, and that's going to be of Dave Byers' WW7V, the estate sale, and it will be Saturday, January the 25th, that's this coming Saturday, at 10 a.m. in the morning. There will be ham gear, lots of it, test equipment, manuals, computers, desks, and much, much more. If you need anything at all, don't miss this estate sale. Again, it's this Saturday at 10 a.m., and the address, 5040, that's 5040, West Soft Wind, which is just north of Pinnacle Peak Road near 51st Avenue. Again, that's just north of Pinnacle Peak Road, 5040 West Soft Wind, this Saturday at 10 a.m. This Thursday, January 23rd, is the next ARA meeting, and it will be held at 7:30 p.m. at the United Way building, which is at 1515 East Osborne. And if your club or organization has some other information they want passed on, just send it to me, Len Winkler, at KFNN Radio, 4800 North Central, Phoenix, Arizona, 85012, or you can fax it to me at 241-1540. 241-1540. That's what it's all about. Now, mark your calendars for the 21st of April, of March, March 21st. The ARCA Spring Ham Fest will be hosted by the Scottsdale Amateur Radio Club, and that'll be held Saturday, March 21st, from 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Scottsdale Community College in the East parking lots, which the Scottsdale Community College is located at 9000 East Chaparral, just east of Pima Road in Scottsdale. This year's HamFest will feature programs on DXing, RTTY, RTTY, Packet, AMSAT, antennas. There'll be an ARRL forum and more. And during the HamFest, the Scottsdale Amateur Radio Club will also be hosting a three-day, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, no-code technician license class. It'll be presented by Lorraine McCarthy, N6CIO. And for information on the classes, you can phone Lorraine at 714-979-CODE. That's 714-979-CODE. In the evening, her number is 714-556-4351, because pre-registration for the class is required. VE exams also will be offered on Saturday. It's $5.40 now for exams, except the novice, which, of course, is free. And it's going to start at 10 a.m. Walk-ins are okay. The HamFest talk-in frequency is 147.18, and the Z-Link also will be used. Admission is $2 per car, general parking, or $5 per swap space. Overnight parking on the site for self-contained RVs Friday and Saturday. And if you want more information, call Walt, N7IZM, at 947-0338. That's Walt, 947-0338. Part of the proceeds of the HamFest will be donated to the Scottsdale Community College Scholarship Fund. And again, that's March 21st. Last year was a tremendous success. There was about 3,500 people there, and we're expecting the same or hopefully more this year. Okay, next up, we're still waiting for my guest, who must have had a big flat tire or something. In the meantime, let's go to a product review. We have Nick Seuss, product review, and he's continuing on the Kenwood 450. And Nick, take it away.
Thank you, Len. This is Nick Seuss from Nick's Corner, this week bringing you the second of a series on the Kenwood TS-450 HF transceiver, the successor to the very popular TS-450. This unit was provided for evaluation by the local ham radio outlet located on the northwest corner of 17th Avenue and Camelback. Thank you, Gary Judd and Company. Last week, I discussed the TS-450 in general terms. Today, I will discuss the receiver and some of its features. The receiver frequency range is 30 kilohertz to 30 megahertz. The transmitter covers the amateur bands between 1.8 and 30 megahertz. The transmitter functions in all the modes that the receiver is capable of handling. Transmitter output is 100 watts. Back to the receiver. Tuning is accomplished with a large main knob. Frequency is read out to 10 hertz accuracy. If the frequency of a station is transmitting is known, it is very easy to tune in a station with this type of arrangement. It's also possible to use the keypad to enter a frequency via the keypad. It's kind of redundant. There are separate RF and AF gain adjustments. This allows choosing how much gain is in the RF or radio frequency amplifier sections of the radio and or how much gain is in the audio output sections of the radio. These are available for the user to compensate for varying conditions. There's a notch filter. The notch filter is very effective and can eliminate an adjacent signal interfering with the desired one. The Skulls control is used to set an internal level control switch. By setting this level, any signal below the threshold level will not be heard in the speaker, thus eliminating unnecessary distractions until the desired signal strength is received. The MCH/VFOCH control is for changing VFO frequency in 10 kHz increments or choosing a memory channel when in memory mode. The unit has 100 usable user-programmable memory channels. Also, this knob was discussed last week in some detail. The noise blanker is a very effective unit. It has two modes, which are selected by push button. Noise blanker push button when successfully pushed cycles through mode 1, then mode 2, then off. The A/P switch automatically changes some of the receiver gain characteristics to enhance weak signal reception under certain conditions. Modes of the type of signals that can be received are LSB, lower sideband, USB, upper sideband, CW, which is code, AM, amplitude modulation, FM, which is frequency modulation, and FSK, which is frequency shift keying. It's kind of a digital mode, are selected with the push button. Selectivity, which when cascaded improves performance, is available in two series ranges. Filter choices in the first range are through 6, 2.4, and 500 hertz. Filter choices in the second range are 12, 6, and 2.4, and 500 hertz. Selection of the filters is chosen by pressing a push button on the front panel. There's a separate button for each IF range. Very effective filtering. Options. Options available for this unit include the DSP-100, which is a digital signal processing unit intended to improve reception and also transmission of signals. Second option is called VS2 voice synthesizer. This is an installable module. When installed, when this option is installed by pressing the voice button on the front panel, it generates a synthesized voice that announces the frequency the radio is tuned to, especially useful for the visually impaired user. The AT250 automatic antenna tuner feature is only for transmitting and matches the transmitter to the feed line when it is enabled by the front panel control. There are other controls and options available due to the limited scope and time for this product review and the extensive user instructions manual. This concludes the highlights of features of the Kenwood TS450 HF transceiver. Next week, a summary of some of the TS450 performance and some of the type of stations that can be listened to with a receiver of this caliber will be discussed. Till next week, thank you. This is Nick's Product Review Corner, presented by Nick Sues, W7ZMD, phone number 992-4133. Amateur radio equipment repair is my business and is located near 40th Street and Bell Road. Again, the phone number, 992-4133. Now back to you, Len.
Thank you, Nick. And Todd has got his tire fixed. Welcome, Todd.
Thank you very much, Len. Pleasure to be here, and sorry to hold up the works.
No problem. Worked out. No problem at all. Okay. Let me get some business done here. In fact, I thought something which would be kind of interesting would be some music you might be familiar with, a little Jeopardy music. Of course, Todd was on Jeopardy. How long ago was it that you actually were on Jeopardy, that they filmed it?
Okay, well, the episodes were actually taped in October 21st and 22nd of 1991, and hearing that music just automatically brings butterflies to my stomach and sweat to my brow.
Okay, well, you were good. I watched you, so I mean, at least I watched two of the three episodes.
As long as you didn't watch the one that I lost, that's good.
Well, I did watch that, and we'll talk about that, too, and you're changing your birth dates and stuff.
That's right.
Okay. Todd was born in Brooklyn, New York, and lived in Queens, New York, for 20 years. He attended Queens College, went on to medical studies at New York University School of Medicine. His training in ophthalmology was completed at Georgetown University Hospital in Washington, and I could attest to the fact that he's a good ophthalmologist because, as fate would turn out, or turned up, I utilized his services last week or the week and a half ago when I got... For 2 weeks, I had something in my eye or something. I couldn't tell what it was, and Todd took care of it in like 5 minutes and took it out and was priced right, and it just worked out really good, and I thank you publicly for that.
Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure. Glad to be of service, Len.
Okay. And he's been a Valley resident since 1983. Currently practices with a large medical group in Tempe. He lives with his wife, Ronnie, and children, in Northeast Scottsdale in a heavily antenna-restricted homeowner association area, and maybe we can get a little bit involved with that. And the answer is Jim Stevens, KK7C, the guru of antenna knowledge, the famous tiger's tail, solar power supplies, solar panels, the sun selector charge controller, TNT no-tune Windom antennas for use on 80, 40, 20, 17, 12, and 10 meters, the QRV DX half-square antenna for 10, 15, 20, and 40 meters, the QuickKit G5 RV antenna models, next-day QSL cards, the DX helper, and the QRV QL quick launch, the OmniLoop antenna, power pole quick interconnects, the QRV 160 through 10 antenna that requires no assembly and goes up easier than the simplest dipole, and more. Those are the answers. What's the question, you ask? Simple. You're supposed to know the question. The question is, what does Antennas West have to sell that makes them the best to call for antenna products at the lowest prices with the best selection? You could have got, what?
All of the above.
$800 or double jeopardy. Now that you know the correct question and the correct answer, give Antennas West a call. 1-800-926-7373. That's 1-800-926-7373. And tell Jim Ham Radio and More had you give him a call. Again, you're listening to Ham Radio and More on KFNN AM 1510. Our phone number is 241-1510, 241-1510, or 1-800-293-KFNN. And if you have any questions for Todd, don't hesitate to give us a call. First, tell us how the Jeopardy process even begins. I mean, they didn't just call you up on the telephone and say, Todd, we'd like you to be a contestant, did they?
No, it's not quite that easy. Of course, you have to have the desire to want to do something like appearing on Jeopardy before all those millions of fans. And once you decide that you have the nerve to do something like that, you write away to the address that they give you at the end of each program, and then they invite you out to California at your own expense, of course, to try out, and that involves taking a written test, 50-question, non-multiple-choice written exam, and if you score sufficiently well on that exam, and they don't tell you exactly what that is, you then go on to play a mock Jeopardy game with two other potential contestants, and you ring bells instead of having the buzzer that you have on TV, and they hold up oak tag cards with the answers, and you're supposed to make sure that you ask in the form of a question and speak clearly and loudly and don't look like you're going to fold under the lights and the pressure. And if they like the way you do with that, then they choose you as a contestant. They interview you a little bit more carefully. They will ask you to write something about yourself and give a little talk about yourself standing up in front of the other potential contestants. And then they say goodbye and don't call us, we'll call you. So I auditioned back in May and finally got a phone call one late Friday afternoon in September saying, can you come in October? And I said, I'll be there. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, how it works.
And so there's no... Okay, now, you go there. Do you have... What kind of pre-planning do you do? I mean, you can't read the Encyclopedia Britannica, and of course those won't give you the answers anyway. What do you do to prepare for such a thing?
Well, I think the best preparation is just to have been a fan of Jeopardy and have watched for years and just kind of get to know the rhythms of the game, the kind of questions they ask. And I think the only way you're going to be able to pass the written exam is if you do a lot of reading, watch a lot of TV, travel a bit. I think all those things are essential in becoming a Jeopardy contestant and doing well on Jeopardy. And I do like to travel. I do read a lot, watch too much TV, and listen to too much radio. So that qualified me. And I don't think there's any real way that you can study for the test that they give you. Once you're getting ready to become a contestant, there are some areas that you can bone up on. But for the written exam, I think you just have to show that you're a little bit well-versed in just about anything.
Now, do they give you a little sneak preview of what the question, not the question, but the categories might be?
No, absolutely not. As soon as they're revealed on the show, that's the moment that the contestants have an idea. We have absolutely no idea of what could come up, and we're all standing there crossing our fingers, hoping that we're going to get good categories. And
you
know the sinking feeling when I got one that wasn't.
You were hoping that one of the categories was maybe medical or the eyes or something.
Well, actually, in a sense, I was hoping it wouldn't be, because out of nerves, I might look pretty dumb on national TV, and there would go my reputation right away. But I did not get any medical categories, as luck would have it, but travel and classical music and other categories that I considered easy for myself did come up, so I was fairly lucky. I just did not luck out on the final Jeopardy questions. They were tough.
Now, you can tell us, just between you and me, there's nobody else listening, what kind of guy is Alec Trebek? How do you pronounce his last name?
Alex Trebek.
Trebek.
Well, he's not as good-looking or suave as you, Len, but...
Oh, yeah. That's why I do radio and he does TV.
But actually, he's a very nice gentleman. We don't get to spend very much time talking with Alex. You see us chatting with him at the end of the show as they're rolling the credits. And there we talk a little bit about whatever pops into our minds. If you've just won a game, you're kind of on cloud nine and you just sort of say whatever comes into your mind, and if you've just lost the game, you're kind of depressed and you probably don't know what to say. And he does interview you right after the first commercial break and asks you questions about things that you're interested in and things that make you look interesting. But as soon as the taping is over, Alex runs out to his dressing room and he changes clothes, and if you've just won the game, they run you up to your dressing room, and you change clothes, too. You know, they tape 5 episodes a day, 2 days in a row. So even though it looks like each day is taped separately, there's only a 15-minute break between most of the shows that are taped in one day.
Yeah. Okay, you answered the next couple questions.
Sorry about that.
<All right. laughs> No problem at all. Okay, so you bring a couple different changes of clothes in the event that you win, right?
That's correct. When you arrive at the studio 10:30 in the morning of the day of taping, you find about 11 or 12 other nervous-looking people just like yourself carrying garment bags with a couple of changes of clothes, and you're hoping that you'll actually get to go past one change of clothes.
Exactly. So, interesting. Okay, we're going to play a little Jeopardy here, and if you're out there and you think you could answer a question, actually, we're going to do a question that, or an answer, that was on the real live Jeopardy show. Did you get this right?
Yes, I did. I think I surprised a lot of people out there.
Now, how much was this question worth?
This was in the single Jeopardy round. This was the top of a category. It was a $500 question.
Uh-oh.
So this was a toughie.
Okay, but what we're going to do is we're going to do it a little differently. First of all, it doesn't matter if you've won recently or not. You have a chance to win, and we're going to take the first caller to play, and if you don't get the answer, then the next one, etc. And we're going to give away what I was given to give away here, 2 free tickets to the Phoenix Open for this Tuesday. And, you know, they're worth $15 a ticket. And all I want you to do is give us a call at 241-1510, 241-1510, or 1-800-293-KFNN, 1-800-293-KFNN. And get online, and we have a few callers online. We'll go and we'll ask this question, and the first one that we get that has the right answer in the form of a question, in the form of a question.
Absolutely. It has to be asked in the form of a question.
we'll win the prizes. So while the phones are lighting up, let's go to the next thing. And the answer is the only place where you can get 75% off Leveler Mini Blinds. That's right, Leveler brand, the real McCoy, now available at a real 75% off the manufacturer's suggested retail prices. And you can choose from 1/2, 1 inch, 1 3/8 inch, or 2 inch aluminum slats in over 250 colors. The largest selection available from any supplier. Choose from Leveler Riviera or Leveler Monaco. A Leveler mini blind, 47 inches wide by 46 inches high, is now only $35.25. And if you buy 4 or more, it's installed free.
This discount will not last forever. It's a manufacturer-sponsored sale for a limited time only. There are 6 great value locations to choose from, all with personal service designers to assist you free of charge. Also, the only place to buy Hunter Douglas Duet Shades at a savings of more than 62% off the suggested retail prices with free installation if you buy at least 4 blinds. So for Leveler, Bailey, Sheik, Kirsch, Hunter Douglas, Varisol, and much more, this is the only place to go. The number to call is 272-4788, 272-4788. They make selecting custom decorating products an enjoyable experience. What's the question? Making sure it's in that form, of course. What is Wallpaper World? Of course, serving the Valley since 1977. Carl, welcome to Ham Radio and More.
Hello, Lynn.
Hello, I got you.
Okay.
All right. I don't know. Something went screwy. Our telex is playing tricks on us. Okay. How you doing today?
I'm just doing great. How about yourself?
Okay. Have you ever been a contestant on Jeopardy?
No, I haven't, but I watch it faithfully.
And you've never even tried to be a contestant?
No, I win enough at home.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, wait till you hear if you don't know. Do you know how much Todd won?
No, I didn't.
Oh, well, you'll have to listen. Okay. We're holding off telling you. Okay, the category is... You can read it, Todd.
Okay.
The category is...
This was one of my favorites. The category was European travel. And the answer is, the kings and queens of this country are buried in the cathedral at Roskilde. That is, the kings and queens of this country are buried in the cathedral at Roskilde. That's Roskilde.
Hmm.
It's a toughie.
Oh, I don't know, just a guess. What is England?
What?
What is England?
England is incorrect. Well, I don't know. Is it correct?
Sorry. England is incorrect.
Well, thank you, Carl.
Okay, Lynn.
Okay, we'll talk
Good
to you
try.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, Charles.
Yes.
Welcome to Ham Radio and More.
How you doing?
Okay. Did you hear the question?
Yeah, I would say Sweden.
Sorry, you're certainly getting warmer, but that's not the correct answer.
Well, okay, thanks.
Thank you, Charles.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Warren, welcome to Ham Radio and More.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. And are you here to play Jeopardy?
I certainly am.
Okay. Do you think you know the answer?
I know the answer.
Okay. Todd, give the question again.
Okay, Warren.
The answer again.
The answer is the kings and queens of this country are buried in the cathedral at Roskilde.
That would be Denmark.
And you have a correct answer, or correct question, I should say. Very good.
Did you watch the show, Warren?
I watched the shows.
Did you watch it and know the answer from that, or did you know the answer?
I watched the shows.
Oh, okay. So you remembered it from there. Very good.
But as easy it is as it is to remember 4 shows in a row all the answers.
Well, it's not that easy, so you should go and become a contestant.
I've been advised of that.
Are you a ham radio operator?
I am. I'm KF7AY.
Okay, excellent. Well, can you use these 2 tickets, I hope, to the Phoenix Open?
It would be my pleasure.
Okay, well, you know where KFNN is located?
I do.
Okay, and I will have these 2 tickets sitting at the front counter. It is for Tuesday. If you want to come by today, Ray would be here, and you can get them from him. Otherwise, tomorrow during normal business hours.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Warren, and happy Jeopardy playing.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Excuse me. Okay, there we go. We had a winner. That was not... I would never have guessed Denmark.
Now, that was a very difficult question. I knew the answer because I happened to visit that particular cathedral on a trip to Denmark, I guess about 10 or more years ago. So that made it a bit easier for me.
Okay, Todd, let's let it out. You were a champion how many times?
Okay, I won 3 games, played in 4 games altogether.
And the first game,
Tell us about the first game, because that one, I saw the very end of it. I didn't see most of it, and you weren't the highest winning champion on that first game.
No, I probably wasn't the lowest either, but I won an embarrassing $599. It was enough to allow me to win the game, and my competition had $0 and $10, so I don't feel too embarrassed. I had gone into the final round with about $8,000+ and had to wager really large, because my closest competition was not too far behind me, and in his three previous games had done very well in Final Jeopardy. So I had to go for the gold and try to beat him by a dollar if we all got the answer right. As luck would have it, none of us got the answer right. We all got the same wrong answer. So I stayed in there and survived with $599.
And the second day you did a little bit better.
Yeah, I actually had lunch in between the episodes there and got my glucose level up a little bit and won over $8,000 in the second game. That was a fairly easy game. By the time I got into the Final Jeopardy, I had more than double the amount of the two competitors, who each had about $4,000, and I had roughly $10,000. So I knew I would win the game unless I made a terrible bet.
Why do people, I watch it every so often, why do people, the champ, the guy who's in the lead, whoever that is, guy or gal who's in the lead, and they're more than double of any of the other two, why do they wager so much and then miss it and then they go way down? I mean, aren't they, can't they calculate and figure it out that they should only wager, you know, X amount so they can't lose?
Good question, Len. I think everybody is greedy and would like to come home with as much money as they can. A safe bet at that point in that kind of game would be to bet nothing. I knew I had a little bit of a margin, and the category was American literature, and I figured I'd give it a chance. So I bet conservatively, hoping to come home a little more, and ended up not getting the question and came home with a little bit less. Again, the competition didn't know the answer either. In fact, once again, we all got the same wrong answer. So I ended up losing roughly $2,000 on that bet and won $8,000 for the game, which was a much more respectable showing.
And the third game?
The third game was the one that I will always enjoy watching. It was a very close game, had incredible competition from an editor who comes from Houston, Texas. Her name was Polly, and she had a very, very nervous voice, and she was unable to get rid of that little quivering voice the whole game, but she managed to give me difficulty right into the very last minute of the round. I ended up getting into Final Jeopardy about $800, I think, ahead of her, maybe even less. And the Final Jeopardy question was on European novels, and this time all three of us got the question right, and I managed to beat Polly by $2.
And you ended up with?
$19,401, I think.
But you, oh, you think, okay.
Roughly.
And the last day, well, the fourth day you didn't win, I might as well say that.
That's right. It was, I taped my first three episodes on Monday the 21st, and then they let us go, and I came back the next morning, sat through the rehearsal and the orientation, this time as a returning champion with three games under my belt and very confident, and played in the first round of the day against two new challengers. Again, had an excellent female challenger, a medical secretary from Philadelphia named Janet, and a veterinarian from California named Bruce, who was not much competition for most of the game. Janet and I were neck and neck for the first part of the game, and Bruce had a bit of luck with a daily double in which he doubled his score from $2,700 to $5,400, and that sort of got him within striking range. The Final Jeopardy category was mythology, which I had just crammed prior to my Jeopardy appearance, but this question or the subject matter never even appeared in Hamilton's Mythology, which was my source book. It was more a question relating to astrology or the zodiac, and I don't even remember the question, but
we will never forget the answer.
That's right. I'll never forget the answer. Sagittarius was Bruce's sign of the zodiac, and he had enough to double his score, and I bet very conservatively, but didn't have enough to beat him out. I had been ahead at that Final Jeopardy with about almost $11,000, and Bruce was somewhere around $6,000, and when he doubled and I lost, he pulled ahead of me. So a lot of disappointed people here in the Valley and all over the country, and especially in my household, but it was a nice showing, and there's still a remote possibility that I could return for the Tournament of Champions next fall.
That would be super. And meanwhile, you've won $28,202,
and in the last game, I won a trip to Puerto Rico, all expense paid for my wife and myself, and we'll be figuring out shortly when we can do that, and that should be a lot of fun. I think that'll console me.
Now, do they take taxes right then and there?
No. With the exception of California tax, the earnings are reported to the IRS, and then you're responsible for taking care of your end of the taxes when tax time comes in April. I haven't received a check yet, so it'll be a headache next year. Right now, I'm enjoying it.
And you bought some satellite equipment?
Yeah, I sort of, in expectation of the check, went out and got a TVRO setup, which my homeowner association is currently fighting me on. Didn't take long for the local snoops to see the dish.
Okay. Well, Carl, you're back again, AFOX. You got some merchandise to sell?
Yeah, well, I'm looking for something to swap, Len.
Okay.
I had a MFJ 1274 packet TNC, and what I'm looking for is an HF rig, probably something similar to a Hot Water 101, 8310 meters, in that vicinity. It would be equivalent in value.
Okay. And you want to give us a phone number?
That's 973-944.
973-8944.
That's correct.
And you have a 1274 that you want to trade for an HF rig.
Yes, I sure do.
Sounds good, Carl.
Okay.
Hope we get you one.
Thanks, Lloyd.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, we're going to do some more business, then we're going to talk about ham radio, because that is one of your, that is your major hobby, right?
That's correct.
N7PMP. For the ultimate in amateur equipment satisfaction, the answer is none other than AEA Incorporated and their new Isoloop Model 10 through 30 HF antenna. It's a significant engineering breakthrough with its high-performance, low-profile size. It's easy to operate from areas with restrictive zoning ordinances or apartments or condos. Did you hear that, Todd?
Sounds like they're aimed right at me.
And you need only one antenna instead of numerous dipoles, unsightly verticals, antenna tuners, or ground radials. It's rated up to 150 watts. You have to get rid of your 1,500 watt amp, though. And it transmits and receives on any frequency between 10 and 30 megahertz. One of the unique features of the Isoloop is its inherent high Q. The Isoloop can be considered a very sharp, tunable filter that radiates. The narrow bandwidth suppresses harmonics from your transmitter, reducing TVI problems. It also attenuates out-of-band signals for nearby transmitters that could overload your receiver. And no mechanical joints means minimal IR losses and better reception. The Isoloop is round, measuring 43 inches in diameter, and weighs but 14 pounds. Better yet, it comes fully assembled. The Isoloop is but one of many exciting new products from AEA. See the complete AEA line at Ham Radio Outlet on Camelback and 17th Avenue. Or you can call AEA directly at 1-800-432-8873. That's 1-800-432-8873, and they'll send you a free catalog. What do you like to do, Todd, when it comes to amateur radio? What are some of your real interests?
Okay, I would have to say that my prime interest in ham radio is DXing, and I'm a proud member of the Central Arizona DX Association, as you are, of course.
And since you brought that up, you went to the banquet dinner, didn't you?
That's correct. I was at the banquet last Saturday night and was the proud recipient of the CADXA DXing Achievement Award. There were two other members of the club who had received that as well, and I was quite surprised and flattered to have won that.
And how was the banquet? How did the presentation by, was it, what's his name, the ham of the year? Vince Thompson?
Vince Thompson, one of the prominent DXers in the world, gave a very interesting presentation on his time and de-expedition done in Bangladesh, I guess about a year ago. And I had the opportunity to see Vince's presentation on Nepal about 2 months before at one of our other club meetings, and Vince always has an excellent slideshow and very interesting commentary to give on his de-expeditions. I'm a lover of travel, as I mentioned before, so it's a real treat to hear Vince talk about the places he's been to, which are all quite exotic.
Okay, and you have you've been only a general for how long?
Well, actually, I've been a ham for a little over a year and a half. I was a technician level. I got my ticket in August of 90 up at Fort Tuthill and stayed a technician for exactly a year just before my certificate of completion of exams was about to expire. This year at Tuthill, I upgraded to advanced, finally got through the hurdle of the 13-word-a-minute code, and also went ahead and took my advanced theory. So I became an advanced and then really really hit the radio with a vengeance, and am well on my way now toward DXCC. I worked my 91st country yesterday morning. That was the Navassa expedition, KP-1, and I have 46 countries confirmed. So watch that mailbox every day with great expectations.
Okay, well, you're listening to KFNN AM 1510. This is Ham Radio and More. My name is Len Winkler, and Todd Lefkowitz is the guest here. And if you want to talk to anybody here, call us at 241-1510, 241-1510. You have a special interest in what you call utility SWL, or shortwave listening. Explain to everybody what that means.
Okay, well, I had been listening to broadcast shortwave broadcasts, broadcast shortwaving for many years. The great services such as BBC, Voice of America, Radio Australia, Vatican Radio, Radio Moscow. That's how I really got into shortwave listening many years ago when I borrowed my cousin's Zenith transoceanic shortwave receiver. And I think my uncle, even before then, had one of those ancient large black Zenith models. I can't remember what the number of that was, but it was one of these incredible...
Somebody out there will call it.
Yeah, I'm sure. My Uncle George back in New Jersey, if he's listening on broadcast DX, he might know the answer. But I've been interested in that for years. And as I learned a little bit more about the hobby, I realized there were all those weird-sounding signals that were in between Radio Moscow and all the other broadcasters, and got a little interested in how to interpret and decode those. And AEA is a very relevant company to mention, as I had bought one of their original Morse and RIDI readers back in the early 1980s, which did not require a computer, which just allowed you to plug the output of your receiver into the unit, and you'd see a Times Square billboard display of press RIDI and occasionally ASCII and Morse code. So that kind of whetted my appetite. It was an unwieldy product to use, and didn't have a whole lot of success with it, but it was a good start. And I remember reading in the World Radio TV handbook about a new product that AEA had put out called the PK-232. This was about 1986 or 1987, and I had already become well-versed in computers. I decided that this was a product that I needed to get hold of, and I found that I was able to much more easily copy RIDI, ASCII, AMTOR services that use that type of broadcasting, and also WeatherFax. And that got me into a whole other sideline of interest here in radio. I began to copy Norfolk Naval Oceanographic Center and San Francisco Coast Guard Station. I was able to get very precise, detailed weather maps and weather pictures on HF with the help of the PK-232. It's just an amazing piece of machinery. I'm not advertising it here, but it's what got me into this particular sideline and was really a jumping off point for some of the other things I've done.
Wait, you'll have to get the AEA facts, weather facts that they now have, which is a special program and a special piece of hardware just for maps, etc.
That's right. I haven't seen it demonstrated yet. I guess the next time I'm down at HRO, I'll have the opportunity
to... They have them in stock, or they did a couple weeks ago.
And, I had purchased my PK-232 over at HRO back then, and didn't even realize what applications it would have someday if I ever decided to become a ham. And various things in my life, like my profession, sort of got in the way of my doing anything about ham radio, and then my number one Elmer, KF7AY, finally twisted my arm and got me into studying Morse code and studying theory, and it was through his gentle coercion that I got my first ticket last year.
But he didn't know that you were going to give that question, right?
No, absolutely not.
All right.
Absolutely not.
Because, I mean, that's
what everybody... We'll file a disclaimer right here and now. But he was the one that finally got me to go ahead and get my ticket, and that's been a great help in my enjoyment and understanding of radio in general.
Well, when I spoke to your wife, she told me that she was very happy to have a ham radio widow rather than a golf widow, because at least you do your ham radioing mostly at home.
That's right. At least she knows where to find me, and it's a lot easier to get me if the kids are misbehaving in the room than out on the golf course.
I want to touch on one thing you have here. The Dallas Remote Imaging Group, what is that?
Okay, that's a society that I'm a member of, obviously based in Dallas, Texas, and they're dedicated to allowing amateurs to receive, understand, and appreciate signals from satellites that are either in geostationary orbit or in polar orbit above the Earth, taking weather pictures, getting other information about the atmosphere. And they're a very well-organized and well-run group that has an excellent computer bulletin board service that that runs out of Dallas. People who are interested in AMSAT-related subjects can get all the latest AMSAT bulletins and files and information. There are satellite tracking programs for the PC that are available to download right off the bulletin board. There's a nominal membership fee that's worth every cent if you're interested in the satellite hobby.
Does that differ from AMSAT?
It actually is an AMSAT member.
It is, okay.
But whereas AMSAT is basically concerned with the use of satellites for transmission and reception of amateur radio signals, the Dallas group covers just about every kind of signal and every type of satellite that an amateur could possibly be able to work with and decode.
And how many members about do they have? Do you have any idea?
You know, I'm really not sure. There's a very involved core membership, of which I'm not a member at this point. But most of them are in the Dallas area, and some are scattered at other locations around the country. But I've had the opportunity to speak with most of them personally, and most of them were very helpful when I decided to get set up an actual direct weather satellite reception.
I'm going to get into the type of antennas or whatever you use, because especially with your antenna restrictions, we might touch on that. One more piece of business. The final Jeopardy answer for today is no hassles, no pressure, just good old-fashioned service. Immediate, super low, in fact, the lowest prices on any and all new vehicles. The same person, they have people all over the country. In fact, even customers as far away as Germany have called to buy their cars. And the question is, of course, when you call 228-2336, 228-2336, and Ken Nichols, the fleet manager of Linda Brock Auto, answers, what do you get? That's right. Ken Nichols has a super buyer savings plan, and you can be part of it. Ken has a rather unique way of selling cars. He does it with caring service and a professional attitude. And it sure don't hurt that he has the absolute lowest prices anywhere. He can do this because he usually sells 10, 20, even 100 cars at a time as the fleet manager for Linda Brock Auto Mall in Scottsdale. But Ken likes to keep busy 7 days a week. In fact, today he's at the Junior Rodeo in Buckeye with trucks there, and he was amazed at the response he got yesterday at the Junior Rodeo looking at his truck. So if you give him a call at 228-2336, 228-2336, he's there now. You can see how the rodeo is doing, if he's riding any steers or bulls or whatever. But he's there now. I'm telling you, he's working 7 days a week selling cars, and he is busy. And a lot of people in the auto business aren't. And it's not because he's selling cars at a high price. He's selling them really cheap. I'm telling you, now is the time to call him, because interest rates have not been lower for a long, long time. And he has financing deals. He has leasing deals. Just call Ken Nichols at 228-2336 today. You'll be happy you did. So will Ken Nichols. So let's find out, Todd, what type of antenna do you use now? You're doing a lot of DXing. What frequency, bands do you usually use?
Okay, I work primarily in 10, 15, and 20, and very occasionally the warp bands that fit in between those. KE7TV, a good friend of mine, has been very instrumental in helping set up the strange dipole that I use for most of my DXing. It's the driven element of an old high-gain beam, and it sits suspended by plastic ties from the eave over my patio in the backyard, and is totally invisible from the neighboring properties, and does a real good job in getting the signal out. It's flat on 20 meters, and using an external tuner can at least appear flat on 10 and 15. I also have a long wire dipole that I use for 40 meters and occasionally 80 meters, although that's pretty rare. For my satellite work, I have a used 5.5-foot satellite dish that takes the signals from goes west, and then a down converter converts it from 1691 megahertz to 137.5 megahertz, and that goes into a special weather receiver, which then sends the signal into a board in my PC and subsequently produces very beautiful weather satellite pictures and weather satellite maps. And that board is made by a company called Quorum in Grapevine, Texas, outside of Fort Worth, I believe. And for other weather satellite work, I have a down east dual boom loop Yagi setup that KF7AY had constructed for me.
And no one sees these things?
No, fortunately,
thanks. What do you have, Doug Henning there or something?
Yeah, right. Right, well, the fence is high enough to obscure the view from the neighboring properties. Didn't work all that well for my TVRO dish, which is 7.5 feet, but that's another story. So I have two weather satellite antennas and then a whole satellite farm in my attic. I have a 2-meter antenna, a Ringo Ranger, also a 2-meter beam from Cushcraft, and a scanner antenna, which I use mainly for TV reception, a TV antenna, and probably something else that I... Oh, yes, and a turnstile reflector for the polar orbiting satellites, the NOAA series and the Meteor series from the U.S. and so erstwhile Soviet Union.
I thought you were going to tell me you did all this with one vertical antenna, you know, that no one could see.
It sounds good, but I can't say that.
My goodness. I was asked, somebody called, and I was asked to repeat where to get some information on the tech classes that are beginning January the 31st for West Valley Amateur Radio Club. They are going to start again January 31st from 7 to 9 p.m., and you can get more information by calling George Hands, KE7DH, and his phone number is 974-3361, 974-3361. That's the technician class that's going to start January 31st, and it's going to be from 7 to 9 p.m. And so now that your neighbors are complaining about your dish that you have now.
That's correct. Even though it truly is not visible from the street, I believe that somebody who lives in a neighboring property across the street in a two-story house probably looked at the antenna and decided to claim that he could see the antenna from the street. I guess if you were Wilt Chamberlain and walking by, you might be able to see the antenna. It truly is a hidden antenna, and of course, being a receiving antenna doesn't interfere with anybody's reception of TV or radio, but unfortunately, up in Northeast Scottsdale, homeowner associations are a force to be reckoned with, and certainly do not promote easy DXing, but I guess one of the reasons I got the award from the CADXA was that despite all these hardships and handicaps, I was still able to get out a decent signal and work my way toward DXCC.
Well, I'm sure that the fact that you're a ham made it easy for you to get onto Jeopardy because it gave you a better voice, practice of talking into the microphone, no more shyness, because you were probably shy all your life until you became a ham. So this is definitely something people should get into before they go on to Jeopardy.
Absolutely true, Len. In fact, I had the opportunity to present Alex Trebek with my own QSL card.
Very good. And he's becoming a ham because of you.
Well, I wish I could make that claim. I hope I hear something to confirm that in the near future.
One question I did have, do you watch any other game shows?
Absolutely none. I've been told that I ought to go on Wheel of Fortune, but I don't know if I can do that. Jeopardy has been a lifelong challenge, and I think it was sufficient to appear on Jeopardy.
Well, we commend you and congratulate you again, and hopefully you will be on the Tournament of Champions, and if you are, let us know in advance. And I thank you again, Todd, for being here today. And I appreciate, again, all my sponsors, AEA Incorporated, Antennas West, Wallpaper World, and Ken Nichols of Linda Brock Auto Mall. Remember to listen next week. Next week, John Moore, NJ7E, and possibly Nick Seuss, W7ZMD, will be here. And we're going to talk about some hot topics of discussion in amateur radio today, the no-code business on amateur radio and some other interesting things. So stay tuned for that. And remember, the Royal Rumble is on today, right after my show, and I know you're going to want to hope Hulk Hogan regains his title. So that's it this week. This is Len Winkler, KB7LPW, and you have my music ready to go? Great. We're clear to next week. 73's Arizona.